So we are deriving a long wavelength 4 for our Landau-Ginzburg functional. Which so later we are going to use to go beyond mean field theory. And so, first I want to focus on this, on the quadratic part. So I call this as zero phi. And so to find its long wavelength form, I want to first rewrite this in Fourier space, right? And so what we found last time was the following expression for S0 phi. So I have 1 over 2 t squared n sum over q phi of minus q. Then I have t over j of q minus 1. And then phi of q. And I guess, sorry, so I have actually included, sorry. So I think I've, did I? I forgot if I did. So did I expand this this to fourth order last time? Okay, because I have included already this minus one here, which comes from actually expansion of log. So let's expand this first. Okay, sorry about this. Okay, so first, what I actually want to do is simplify this term, so in the same way that we did when doing mean field theory, by expanding this to fourth order in phi I, okay? So the logic behind this is that again, so we are interested in what happens near the transition between ferromagnet and paramagnet, where the expectation value of phi is going to be small. Okay. But so there is actually a more rigorous justification for this, which will come from renormalization group. Okay. Basically, the language we are going to use is that higher order terms in this expansion will turn out to be irrelevant, okay? But so we will justify this rigorously later. Let me just expand this now. So I have 1 over 2t sum over I and j phi I j I j inverse phi j. And so then the expansion of this is going to have the following form, minus 1 half sum over I phi I divided by t squared, and then plus 1 twelfth sum over I phi I over t to the fourth, and I'm going to neglect all the higher powers of phi I divided by t, okay? Okay, so now I want to call this actually as zero phi. This is the quadratic part of the Landau-Ginzburg functional. Okay. And so then, if you Fourier transform this, So I write again phi I as 1 over n sum over q phi of q e to I q dot ri, and same for jij. So jij is 1 over n as well, sum on I and j, j of q e to I q dot ri minus rj. Okay, so if you plug this into here, so then we get what I've written. So a zero phi in Fourier space has the following form. It's 1 over 2 t squared n sum over q phi of minus q, and then I get t divided by j of q, so this comes from here, and then minus 1, which comes from here, okay? Okay, so now it's all fine. And so then, what I will do is use my small q form for this Fourier transform of the interaction matrix. Small q form for J of Q, and so small q's in momentum space correspond to precisely long distances in real space. Okay, so I have J of Q approximately equal to J minus 1/2 k dot q squared, right? Which I can write also in the following way. So if I pull out j in front, so this is 1 minus k divided by 2j times q squared. And then I can, you remember that I introduced the square of the effective range of the interaction, which was dk, where d is the dimensionality, divided by j. So this combination is just d over 2 times range of the interaction squared, right? So you write this as j times 1 minus 1 over 2 d r squared times q squared, okay? Okay, so now let me take this t over j of q and expand this, also leaving only terms of up to order q squared times r squared, right? So I have t divided by j of q. So this is t over j, right? And then 1 plus 1, okay, right, this approximately over 2d r squared q squared, right? And then, so this j is simply the mean field tc, right? So let me rewrite it in terms of tc. So I get t over j of q minus 1. So this is the coefficient of the quadratic form of phi of q, phi minus q. So I have, this is approximately equal to, so t over tc, 1 plus 1 over 2d, r squared q squared, minus 1. So this is t over tc minus 1, right? And then plus 1 over 2d, t over tc, r squared q squared, okay? And then so this combination is simply the small t, right? So dimensionless temperature, small t, right? And then so this ratio here t over tc, since we are interested in what is happening near tc, so this I can just set equal to 1, okay? So this is approximately t plus 1 over 2d r squared q squared, okay? Okay, so let's plug this in as 0 phi. So I get as 0 phi equals, so this t squared here I can also replace by tc squared, again by for the same reason that we are interested in what's happening near the critical temperature. So I get 1 over 2 tc squared n, right? Sum over q phi of minus q. Then I have reduced temperature plus 1 over 2d r squared q squared, and then phi of q, okay? And now just a final final touch on this thing. Let me, so it's kind of convenient to redefine these variables, phi of q, in such a way that at least one of the coefficients in our Landau-Ginzburg functional is a simple number, is equal to 1, okay? You will see why that is, but so, typical choice is this is a coefficient of this particular term proportional to q squared. Okay, so you will see why that is convenient. So let me redefine. Let me introduce new phi's. And I will call them phi tilde of q. Such that I absorb this whole coefficient into the definition of phi's, okay? So I define phi tilde of q as r a to d over 2, and then root of 2d tc. You will see why I want a to d over 2 as well. So if I do that, if I replace my phi's by phi tildes, then I get a 0 of phi tilde is equal to 1 over 2 n a to the d, okay? And this n times a to the d is just 1 over the volume of the system, right? And so then 1 over v sum over q, we will be easily able to transform into an integral over q, okay? Sum over q phi tilde of minus q. So then this coefficient changes to 2dt divided by r squared. And then the coefficient of q squared becomes just 1, okay? Plus q squared phi of q, okay? Okay, now let me call this combination, let me call it R, okay? And R has the same, basically the same properties as T, okay? So R is positive when T is greater than TC, and it's negative when T is less than TC, okay? So R is greater than 0 when T is greater than TC, and R is less than 0 when t is less than tc, okay? And let me also convert now this sum over q into an integral over q, right? Using the usual correspondence at 1 over v, 1 over the volume of the system, sum over q goes into integral d dq divided by 2 pi to the d, right? And let me also drop the tildes from now on. So phi tildes are going to be my new phis. Yes.
So in your last expression, you want the phi to be phi tilde.
Sorry. So this is, of course, phi of q here. So I'm just expressing phis in here in terms of phi tildes. Okay.
Yes, so in the next line.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. Thank you. Yes. But from now on, I will drop tildes, okay? So my phi tildes are the new phis. And so then I get as 0 of phi is equal to 1 half integral d dq 2 pi to the d phi of minus q r plus q squared phi of q, okay? And now, finally, let me Fourier transform this back to real space, okay? So I will now define a continuous space Fourier transform. So I will call basically all the memory of the fact that our fields were defined on a lattice has disappeared now, right? We've made this long wavelength approximation, okay? So now I can say that my fields phi depend on a continuous coordinate. I will call it x, this is a vector. So I can write now a continuous space Fourier transform in the following way, just d dq 2 pi to the d phi of q e to I q dot x, right? And correspondingly, the inverse Fourier transform is phi of q equals integral d dx phi of x e to minus I q dot x, right? And so then I just plug this into here, okay? So what happens then is that this q squared, right? So q squared turns into 2 powers of derivative in real space, right? Because this is how precisely how q squared can appear, right? If I differentiate phi of x in this expression, what happens is that I bring down 1 power of I times x. Oh, I times q, sorry. Okay? So 2 derivatives gives me q squared. And so then what I get in real space is s0 of phi equals 1 half integral d dx so gradient of phi squared, okay? So that comes from q squared and then plus r phi squared, and that's it, okay? right? Yeah.
It seems to me you didn't really change variables, you just it's a new definition of F0. You plugged in phi, not phi.
No, so I've re-expressed phi's in terms of phi tildes, right? And then I've simply called phi tildes, I renamed them to phi's again.
But so when you plug in, it seems like on the left side, you say it's S0 of phi tilde.
Right.
It's like a new S0. It's not the same function.
No, it's the same function. It's just a function that's re-expressed in terms of phi tildes, right? So I take these, I take phi's, right, and re-express them in terms of phi tildes. But it's the same. It's the same as zero. It's the same function as zero.
So you into the first line at the top, you plug in phi, right? Not phi tildes.
Yeah, of course.
Plug in phi.
Plug in phi. So I write phi as phi tilde divided by this coefficient.
It's not important.
Right? So, you know, this, for example, is this divided by this, and also, well, there's also this TC squared.
Just if you look at the first line and third line, and you can, like, supposedly you can just plug in phi tilde.
Well, maybe I should write it in this way, that phi is equal to this inverse times phi tilde. Okay. So then you just directly plug in this instead of phi. Okay.
Here we are assuming phi is minus 2 equals phi of q.
Sorry?
Here we are putting phi of minus 2 equals phi of q.
Phi of minus q.
When you're writing phi square there.
Right. Well, no, so it's not. Okay, so this. The fact that I have phi of minus q here and phi of q here, that just comes from the Fourier transform, right? It follows from the fact that let's do this backwards. Let me start from this and arrive back at the Fourier transform form. Okay, so I have this is equal to 1/2. Integral dx, right? And now, let me just look at this term. Okay, the second one is the same. So I get I have to Fourier transform both phi's here, right? So I have integral dq 2 pi to the d, and also integral dq prime. 2 pi to the d, right? So I have phi of q prime, right? And then I have gradient of e to I q dot x, right? Dot gradient of e to I q prime dot x, right? Okay, so this gives me, so this is equal to 1/2 integral dx, right? Integral dq 2 pi to the d, integral dq prime 2 pi to the d. Phi of q prime, and then so I get iq prime, so it's minus 1, right? Q dot q prime, and then e to I q plus q prime dot x, okay? And then I'm just using a continuous version of this identity that, so integral g dx e to I q plus q prime dot x, okay? So for lattice Fourier transforms, we had 1 over n times sum over I of this thing is equal to Kronecker delta. So the continuous space version of this is that this is equal to 2 pi to the d Dirac delta function of q plus q prime, okay? So this forces q prime to be equal to minus q. And so then we get this is equal to 1 half integral d dq 2 pi to the d phi of q phi of minus q, right? And then so minus 1 and then q times minus q. So that just gives me plus q squared, okay? Okay, now finally, what remains is just dealing with this phi to the fourth term, right? And there, basically, all we have to do is replace summation over lattice sites by an integral, right? So I just say that 1 over a to the d, which is the volume of the unit cell, right? Volume in real space per one lattice site. Sum over I, so this is replaced by integral d dx, okay? And then I will call whatever is the coefficient of phi I to the fourth after I also rename it to change it to phi tilde. All that matters is that the coefficient of that thing is positive, okay? And so I will call this coefficient u. And then, so let me go here. Then I finally get a continuum version of my Ginzburg-Landau functional. Which has the following form. So I get integral d dx 1 half grad phi squared, right, plus r over 2 phi squared. And then, so just for later convenience, so the coefficient of the quartic term is always chosen in the following way as u divided by 4 factorial, okay? The 4 factorial is just for convenience with renormalization group calculations, phi to the fourth, okay? So this is much, much simpler than what we had before, right? This functional is basically defined just by two parameters, right? R and U. And the only thing we really need to know is that R changes sign at t equals cc, and U is always positive, okay? So R C and U is positive, okay? Now, so in principle, I didn't have to do all these mathematical manipulations that I did. I could have written this down based on symmetry considerations alone. Okay, so the fact that this is an even function of phi, this just follows from this sigma to minus sigma symmetry of the Ising model, right? So the fact that S of phi is an even functional of phi follows from the symmetry of the Ising model Hamiltonian with respect to switching the signs of all sigmas. And then the fact that I can only have even powers of the spatial derivative, that follows from the inversion symmetry of space, from the fact that any plus direction is equivalent to the opposite direction. Okay. So even powers of the gradient. So this follows from inversion symmetry. Okay. But so it's nice to also be able to derive it. Okay. Even though it can be written down at least once, it's nice to be able to derive it as well. Okay. So that's why I derived it. Okay, so and then as we will see, so the reason, the real reason that we can neglect the higher powers of phi and also the higher powers of the gradient, right, which come from the higher orders in the expansion of J of Q with respect to Q. So the reason is will be the what's called irrelevance. Okay, so the higher powers of phi and higher powers of the spatial gradient are irrelevant, meaning that they do not affect the values of the critical exponents. Okay. So it's not obvious now, but so we will see exactly how this works. Okay. Okay. So mean field theory, just as before, corresponds to taking this and simply minimizing this functional, assuming that phi is spatially uniform, right? So mean field theory corresponds to saying that phi of x is just equal to phi bar, right? So in this case, this gradient of phi drops out. And then all I have then is S of phi equals whatever the volume of the system is, V, right? And then R over 2 phi bar squared plus U over 4 factorial phi bar to the fourth, right? And then I need to minimize S of phi with respect to phi bar. So if I minimize, I get R phi bar, right, plus U over 6, I guess, phi bar to the third. So this is equal to 0. And a non-zero solution is phi bar equals plus minus square root of 6R divided by U, right? And so this gives me precisely the mean field result that phi bar goes as, this is minus, of course. And so remember that R is just proportional to the reduced temperature, to small t. And so this precisely gives me the mean field result that this goes as minus t to the 1/2, right? Okay, so here everything is consistent with what we've done before, right? Except, you know, we can do it in a much, much simpler way. Okay, so now let me do the following. Before we move on to the normalization group, let me introduce something that's gonna play a very important role in everything that follows. So let me do a dimensional analysis of this Ginzburg-Landau functional. So basically, as we will see later, whether something is relevant or irrelevant is going to depend precisely on what I will call dimension of various quantities in this functional. Okay. So let me define dimension of any physical quantity. Dimension of any physical quantity. So by definition, this is going to be its dimension in units of wave vector. Okay. Any physical quantity to be its dimension in units of wave vector k again. So this seems like an arbitrary choice here. We will see why that is convenient to do here later from renormalization group when I talk about renormalization group. So for now, let's just take it as given. So the dimension of wave vector itself then is going to be equal to 1 by definition. Okay. Dimension of spatial coordinate x is going to be minus 1, right? Because spatial coordinate is has dimension of 1 over the wave vector. Okay. Now, so since our Ginzburg-Landau functional enters in the following way. So we have partition function as an integral of e to minus s of phi, right? So this means that s of phi has to be dimensionless, right? So s of phi is dimensionless. So dimension of S has to be equal to 0. Okay. Okay, so let's take this term here, grad phi squared, and let's find the dimension of phi from this requirement that S of phi has to be dimensionless. Okay, so I have integral d dx of grad phi squared. So this is dimensionless. which means that dimensions of all the quantities in there has to sum have to sum to zero, right? Okay, so I have dimension of the measure of the integration measure, so it's d times x, a dimension of x, and dimension of x is minus one, so this is minus d. Okay. Dimension of so I have two spatial derivatives. This dimension of spatial derivative is one over dimension of x, so it's one. So I have minus d plus two. Plus I have two dimensions of phi, so plus twice dimension of phi, and so this has to sum to zero. And so therefore, the dimension of phi is equal to 2 minus g over 2, right? D minus 2 over 2. Okay? Right? Okay, so let's find now the dimensions of R and U using the same logic. So I have integral d dx r phi squared, so this is dimensionless. So therefore, minus d plus, and so two dimensions of phi, so that we already know, is equal to d minus 2 plus d minus 2 plus dimension of r has to be equal to 0. And so therefore, dimension of r is just equal to 2. Okay. And finally, so dimension of u, so I have again minus d plus now 4 dimensions of phi. So this is going to be plus 2d minus 4, right? And then plus dimension of u. And so this is equal to 0. And therefore, dimension of u is equal to 4 minus d. Okay? So the significance of this is that, so as we will see later, basically, the quantities which have in the positive dimension in units of k will be relevant. Okay, so if you have positive dimension, that means relevant, and relevant means that, you know, it has to be present in this functional. Otherwise, if we neglect it, we will get the critical exponents wrong, okay? While if dimension is negative, then it's irrelevant. Okay? And so this is really the logic in leaving only second power of gradient here and cutting off this expansion at order 5 to the 4th. So if you were to calculate dimensions of all the quantities of the coefficients of all the higher order terms in phi, we would find that the dimension becomes more and more negative. Okay? So that's the reason for neglecting them. Same goes for higher powers of the gradient. Okay. But anyway, so we are going to discuss this more later. Now, let me do the following thing. So let me, using this information about the dimensions of various quantities here, let me rewrite this functional in dimensionless variables, okay? And you will see why I want to do that. So let me rewrite this thing. Okay, so let me rewrite S of phi using dimensionless variables. So I have dimension of R is equal to 2, right? And dimension of X is equal to minus 1. So therefore, I can introduce dimensionless X in the following way. So let me call this dimensionless X, X tilde. And I will define, sorry, let me write it like this. I will define X tilde in the following way as X equals X tilde to R times R to minus 1/2, right? Because the dimension of X is equal to dimension of R to minus 1/2. So this means that X tilde, if I define it in this way, has dimension 0, right? So dimension of X tilde is 0. So in the same way, I can define dimensionless phi. I will also call it phi tilde as r to g minus 2 over 4. Right? So again, dimension of phi tilde here is equal to 0. Okay. And then, so if I rewrite, if I re-express x in terms of x tilde and phi in terms of phi tilde, my Ginzburg-Landau functional takes the following form, s of phi tilde. So let me just write down the answer and skip the algebra. D dx tilde, 1/2 grad tilde, let me write gradient with respect to the variable x tilde as grad tilde squared plus 1/2 phi tilde squared plus u divided by 4 factorial r to d minus 4 over 2 phi tilde to the 4th. Okay? And so now this coefficient is going to be my new u, so I will call it u tilde. Okay. And so the point of this is the following. So you see that, so since R is proportional to the reduced temperature, T, right? So this means that u tilde is proportional to u times t to d minus 4 over 2, right? Which means that if dimensionality of space is less than 4, less than the upper critical dimension, this u tilde is going to diverge as I approach the critical temperature, right? So u tilde diverges as T is going to 0 as I approach the critical temperature, okay? And so this is just, you know, another piece of bad news for us, okay? So what I've shown in the previous lecture is that I cannot treat this this problem by expanding around mean field, right? Because what we got in the end was divergent contribution from fluctuations, right? So in previous lecture, we saw that so this procedure, taking S of phi and expanding around mean field, so writing this as S of phi bar plus 1/2, I will write it schematically as d2s d phi squared delta phi squared. So this does not work because fluctuations give a divergent contribution to the specific heat and to everything else, in fact. Okay. This little calculation shows that, so, you know, another thing you might want to try is doing perturbation theory in this term, right? So if I ignore this term, if I leave only terms in the Landau functional, which are quadratic in phi, then this problem I can solve exactly, right? Because then this just involves doing Gaussian integrals for the partition function, right? And Gaussian integrals can always be done exactly. Okay? What prevents us from doing those integrals is this phi to the fourth term. Okay? And so you might want to think that, okay, I cannot do this, right? But maybe I can do perturbation theory in phi to the fourth term. And this shows that we cannot do it either, because the coefficient of phi to the fourth term grows, in fact, as we approach the critical temperature. So this shows that we cannot do perturbation theory in the u phi to the fourth term either, okay? So basically, you know, all the simple methods of dealing with this problem that one can think of don't work near the critical temperature, okay? So pretty much, it looks like what we have to do is actually calculate this integral here exactly. There is nothing else left, okay? And so it turns out that it's possible to evaluate this integral pretty much exactly as long as dimensionality of space is close to the upper critical dimension, is close to 4, okay? And the procedure for doing that is precisely the renormalization group. Okay, so let's see how this works. Okay, so I really have to take this and deal with this functional as it is. Can't really throw anything out from here. And can't do an ordinary perturbation theory. None of this works. Okay, so there are two, and so again, so the answer to this is randomization group, and there are two kind of ways to look at that. One is purely formal, and another one is more conceptual and physical. Okay, so formally, RG is basically a way to do this integral over phi for the partition function kind of in little steps. Okay? RG or a normalization group is means doing this integral in small steps. And it turns out that it's possible to perform those steps exactly if dimensionality of space is close to 4. Okay. And now physically, RG is in fact this. Okay, so the way we have derived this functional from the original microscopic exact Landau-Ginzburg functional, right? Is going to is making a long wavelength approximation to it, right? So the renormalization group is kind of is a formalization of that transformation of going to longer and longer length scales, okay? And seeing what happens and watching what happens to this functional. Okay, so another way of looking at RG. Is RG is a formal way of, you can call it coarse graining. So coarse graining means precisely sort of eliminating all the unnecessary information in this Ginzburg-Landau functional that has to do with what happens at small length scales, right? So and we kind of have done already one step of that, right? Here, but so what I want to do now is keep doing that, and we'll see how doing that over and over again is going to help us solve this problem, basically, of calculating the critical exponents. Okay. Okay. So what do I mean exactly? So let me write my field phi of x as a Fourier transform again. And I'll write it in the following way, so I will explain what this means in a second. So phi of x is integral from 0 to lambda d dk 2 pi to the d phi of k e to I k dot x, okay? So the integral from 0 to lambda here means that the magnitude of k, right? Well, its minimum is obviously 0, but then it's restricted to be less than lambda. And lambda here, you remember that in our original lattice Fourier transforms, right? The wave vectors were restricted to be in the first Brillouin zone, meaning basically the interval from for each component from minus pi over a to pi over a. And this simply has to do with the fact that on the lattice, it doesn't make sense to talk about anything that changes on a length scale which is smaller than the lattice spacing. That's why physically I have this restriction on the maximum size of the wave vector, right? So large wave vector means you know, things that are happening on small length scales, right? And so here, this cutoff lambda is of the order of the size of the Brillouin zone in my original lattice problem, so pi over a. So this is basically a remnant. You know, we have in this continuum Ginzburg-Landau functional, we have pretty much forgotten that that there was this underlying microscopic problem where the variables were defined on the lattice. But so this, the existence of this upper limit for the momentum space integral is the remnant of that. Okay, this is where we remember that originally we had a Ising model defined on the lattice. Okay, and now, so I want to break up this integral into two parts. Okay, so I'll write this as phi of x is equal to sum of phi less of x plus phi greater of x, where so phi less of x is defined as an integral from 0 to lambda divided by b. So I'll say what b is in a second. D dk to pi to the d phi of k e to I k dot x, and then phi greater contains the remaining Fourier components, which I have thrown out here. So phi greater of x is equal to integral from lambda over b to lambda d dk to pi to the d phi of k e to I k dot x, okay? So b here is going to be a number which is greater than 1 but close to 1, okay? So which means that lambda over b is slightly smaller than lambda, right? So lambda over b is a little bit less than lambda. So the phi less will be called slow modes. And slow here refers to the fact that they involve smaller wave vectors, okay? The wave vectors going from 0 to lambda over b. So this corresponds to slower variation in space, right? And then those will be fast modes. Okay. And so basically, so the main step of the RG procedure is integrating, but only over the fast modes always. Okay. And so integrating over the fast modes also physically corresponds to precisely coarse graining, right? So I'm by integrating over the fast modes, I will be eliminating at each step of this procedure information about what happens on small length scales, right? Because again, large wave vectors here mean things which are happening on small length scales. Okay. So RG consists of, again, formally of integrating over the fast modes, and then kind of watching how this integration over the fast modes affects the remaining Landau functional. Okay. Now, again, you know, formally, why do we want to integrate over the fast modes? And so this is, you remember that when we discussed these fluctuations about mean field theory, right? The problems, the divergences, arose from precisely from the contribution of slow modes, from the contribution of wave vectors, which were close to zero. Right, so if you recall this expression for, let's say, the correction to the specific heat, right? So it contained an integral over Q and a divergence in this integral at the critical temperature came from precisely from Q equals zero. So formally, again, we want to avoid always integrating over modes with wave vectors close to zero. So this is why, again, formally I'm integrating over the fast modes, okay? But if I keep doing this over and over again, eventually I will be able to integrate over everything, right? You know, this may not make much sense now, but we will go through this transformation in great detail, and hopefully it makes sense after that. Okay, so let's take our Landau-Ginzburg functional. Let me rewrite this in terms of the fast and slow modes. Okay. So let me. So let's rewrite S of phi as a functional of fast and slow modes separately. Okay. Slow and fast. Okay. So let's first deal with the quadratic part. So let me call this S0 of phi, as I did before. So this is 1/2 integral dx, right? So grad phi squared plus r phi squared, right? And so to separate the fast and slow modes, let me write this again in Fourier space, right? So this is equal to 1/2 integral dk 2 pi to the d from 0 to lambda, right? I have phi of minus k, phi of k, and then I get r plus k squared, right? Now, you remember that our fields phi of x are real, right? So phi of x is a real field. So its reality actually imposes some constraints on the Fourier transform, okay? So let me take this expression here and let me calculate the Fourier transform of phi star of the complex conjugate of phi. So phi star of x is equal to integral from 0 to lambda g gk 2 pi to the g phi star of k, right? And then e to minus I k dot x, right? Let me now change, so k is just an integration variable here. Let me change this integration variable from k to minus k, just to bring this back to the same form as the Fourier transform of phi of x. So this is equal to integral from 0 to lambda d dk 2 pi to the g phi star of minus k e to I k dot x, right? But since phi is real, phi star has to be equal to phi, right? So therefore, this has to be equal to, let me continue it here. So this has to be equal to integral from 0 to lambda d dk 2 pi to the g phi of k e to I k dot x. So what this means is that phi star of minus k has to be equal to phi of k. Okay? So the Fourier transform, so from the fact that phi of x is a real function, it follows that while its Fourier transform does not have to be real, but complex conjugate of phi taken at wave vector minus k has to be equal to phi taken at wave vector k. Okay? So what this means is that I can replace this phi of minus k actually by phi complex conjugate of k, right? So this is in fact equal to phi complex conjugate of k. And so then I have S0 of phi is equal to 1 half integral d dk 2 pi to the d absolute value of phi of k squared, right? And then r plus k squared. And what this means is that in this quadratic part of the Landau-Ginzburg functional, right, the slow and the fast modes are completely decoupled. So now I can write this integral as 1 half integral from 0 to lambda over b, which means integral over the slow modes, d dk 2 pi to the d phi of k squared r plus k squared plus the same integral for the fast modes. So integral from lambda over b to lambda d dk 2 pi to the g again phi of k modulus squared r plus k squared, right? And now you see, so the contribution of the slow modes and the fast modes just that they are decoupled from each other. And so I can write my S0 of phi just as S0 of phi less, right, plus S0 of phi greater. Okay, so slow and fast modes are decoupled in the quadratic part of the Landau-Ginzburg functional. As we will see, this will not be the case in the quartic part. Okay. Okay, so now let's deal with the quartic part. Well, the couple just means that, so here I have a zero phi, right? And I want to now rewrite this as a function of phi less and phi greater separately, right? And what we've just seen is that a zero phi, I can just write this as a zero phi less, so exactly the same functional for slow modes, plus a zero phi greater. So it does not involve any terms which couple phi less and phi greater. I could, for example, have contributions like this, you know, phi less, phi greater squared, or something like that. So this, well, it obviously does not, it cannot come from the quadratic part because this is fourth order already, right? But so this would be an example of a term that couples the slow modes and the fast modes. Okay? And this just, as you will see, this represents kind of a complication in, because what we want to do is integrate out the fast modes, right? So when they're decoupled from the slow modes, this is easy to do. But when they are coupled, it's not. It means that again, as we will see, this process then of integration over the fast modes will modify the Landau-Ginzburg functional for the slow modes. Okay. Yeah.
So is your decomposition this the last two terms that you wrote on the far right hand side there?
Yeah.
But so I see those. But what are those supposed to be? What is S zero phi less?
Well, so S zero phi less would be just this, right? Okay, well, let me write it down then explicitly. So as you can just see from here, right, as zero phi less, if I again write it in the real space, so as zero phi less is going to be 1/2 integral dx, so grad phi less squared plus r phi less squared, and the same for phi greater, so it's 0 phi greater is 1/2 integral ddx grad phi greater squared plus r phi greater squared, okay? Okay, so let's deal with the quartic term, and then we will see what it means when they are coupled, when the slow and fast modes are coupled to each other. You know, just don't worry too much if this doesn't seem to make sense at this point. So we will go through, as I said, through all the steps carefully, and hopefully then at the end you will see kind of the big picture. What is the meaning of all this? Okay, so let's look at the phi to the fourth part, and so let me call this S interaction. Phi. So this is u divided by 4 factorial integral dx phi to the fourth of x. Okay. So let's now, in the same way, write this out in Fourier space. Okay? So this is U divided by 4 factorial integral ddx. And then, so I have four integrals from 0 to lambda. So d k1 to pi to the d up to d k4 to pi to the d. And well, let me just write one sign of integral, okay? So phi of k1, phi of k2, phi of k3, phi of k4, and then e to I k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4 dot x, right? And so now I will use again this basic property, basic identity of Fourier transforms, that integral ddx of e to I k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, this is equal to 2 pi to the d, and then the delta function, Dirac delta function of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, okay? So you can think of this delta function here as kind of a momentum conservation, right? So if you think of this of these wave vectors as momenta, okay, then what this delta function means is that all of the momenta have to sum to zero. Okay. So you know physically that this the fact that there is such momentum conservation follows from again from translational symmetry of space. It follows from and the translational symmetry of space is expressed in this term by the fact that this u here is just a constant. It's independent of x, right? If u was dependent of on x, that would mean that the space is not translationally symmetric, right? I would not have, you know, one point in space would not be equivalent to another point because this coupling, this coefficient u would depend on the spatial coordinate. But since the space is translated, we assume that our system is translationally invariant. This u here is a constant, and as a consequence, I get this momentum conservation in Fourier space. Okay. Okay. Now let me do the following here. Let me write my Fourier transforms of my fields in the following way. So let me define phi less of k. So this will be just phi of k if k corresponds to the slow modes, right? So the magnitude of k is between 0 and lambda over b, okay? And zero otherwise, okay? I'm not really introducing anything new here. This is just a slightly different notation, which I introduced simply for convenience, okay? And then phi greater of k is gonna be the other way around. So it's zero when k corresponds to the slow modes. And it's equal to phi of k when So k is between lambda over b and lambda. Okay. So then for any k, right, I can say that phi of k is equal to phi less of k plus phi greater of k, right? Simply because they, well, this, those two intervals don't overlap, right? And so now, so let me explicitly write this this term here in terms of phi less of k and phi greater of k. So this is equal to u over 4 factorial integral. So integral from 0 to lambda d dk1 to pi to the d dk4 to pi to the d. And so each of those phi of k's I will write as phi less of k plus phi greater of k. So phi less of k1 plus phi greater of k1 times phi less of k2 plus phi greater of k2 times phi less of k3 plus phi greater of k3 times phi less of k4 plus phi greater of k4 and times this delta function. K1 plus K2 plus K3 plus K4, okay? And so already here you can see that in this term, the fast and the slow modes will not be decoupled, right? Because clearly they will be cross terms here, which depend on both the fast modes and the slow modes. Okay, so slow and fast modes are coupled in here. And so I cannot write S interaction as just a sum of S interaction of phi less and S interaction of phi greater, right? Okay, let's just take it as it is for now. So basically what this shows that is that S interaction, again, so intrinsically it does not decouple into something that depends only on phi less and phi greater. So I have to write S interaction as a function of both phi less and phi greater, right? Okay, so now let me imagine just formally that I can do the integral over the fast modes in my functional integral representation of the partition function. Okay. So I have, well, let me just say one more thing, and then I'll finish. So I have my functional integral representation for the partition function. And I can write this as now two separate integrals over all the fast modes and all the slow modes of e to minus s of phi less and phi greater. And so imagine that somehow, we will learn exactly how later, somehow we can do this, the integral over the fast modes here, right? So after we've performed this integral, we'll still have some integral over the slow modes of some other functional, right, of the slow modes only. And this functional will be different from the original one precisely because of this coupling between the fast modes and the slow modes, okay? So what we want to analyze is how the functional of the slow modes changes after we've integrated out the fast modes, okay? So this is going to be the first step of the RGE transformation, okay? And so we'll do it tomorrow.